Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of The Vegas Therapist. I am your host, Ryan Winder. And remember, what's happening in Vegas is not staying in Vegas, as I bring you helpful tips in all sorts of topic areas with a Vegas twist, of course. So let's get the show started. Welcome, welcome everybody. It's good to have you in for another episode of the show. I have an amazing show for you today with a tremendous guest. Theo Fleury, NHL legend, is joining the show to talk about trauma and healing from trauma. Theo not only is a World Junior champ, Stanley Cup champ, gold medal winner, but he is also a entrepreneur now, relational trauma expert, a speaker, an author, and so much more. He's going to stop by the show to talk about his trauma and the things that he experienced as a young person and how that shaped his life and caused a lot of destruction early on, just as far as the way that he dealt with the trauma, which was by not dealing with it. But then now the path that he's on now, as far as healing and the growth that he's experienced, and now how he's helping others go through their trauma, and just a great guy with an amazing story, and just so humble and willing to share what he has gone through, and to just all in the name of helping others. So it's going to be a great one. I strongly suggest just sitting back and taking it all in and listening to what he has to say. And if it's something that you've experienced, definitely reach out and ask for some help if you connect to the things that he's talking about. Because that's how we heal, is we got to reach out and we got to talk about what's going on for us. But before we get to him, just want to say again, if you haven't, go join the Facebook group, The Vegas Therapist Podcast, Ryan Winder Facebook group, for updates and just also articles and quotes and different things I post on there, just to check in with the community and the people that are following the show. So you can go and join that. Also, if you want to email me, you can, thevegastherapist@gmail.com. You can go to my website too, thevegastherapist.com is the website. And so there you can see things that I offer as far as teaching, coaching, speaking, whatever it is. Those things they're on the website. And also too, if you haven't had a chance to rate the podcast on Apple, go ahead and rate it, give it a review. I definitely appreciate those ratings and reviews, as it bumps up the listening to other people. So that would be great. So let's get to the episode and Theo Fleury. All right. So this time I'd just like to welcome in my guest. He is a world champion, or junior champion, a Stanley Cup champion, gold medal winner in the 2002 Olympics. He's an entrepreneur, a relational trauma expert, a speaker, an author, and a humanitarian. So at this time, I'd like to welcome in Theo Fleury. Thanks, Theo, for joining me today.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for asking me to be on the podcast.
Yeah, it's good. Great. It's good to have you. So this is the Vegas Therapist Podcast. I'm going to start out with a Vegas question. So, I mean, I read the book again, and I noticed Vegas popped up a few times in the book. But so I do have a curious question. What do you think it would have been like, now that there's a team here, what do you think it would have been like to travel here and have to play here? What would that have been like for you?
Oh, it would have been a blast.
It would have been a blast.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yes. You know, maybe too much.
I don't know if I would have actually made it to the game, but it might have been it would definitely be interesting. So, yeah. You know, I've had a lot of good times in Vegas, and obviously for a guy who's addicted to everything, it's a one-stop shop, right? So,
right. Yes. Yeah. It has everything an addict needs.
Yes. Right. Yeah.
But
That's why it's one of the most popular tourist destinations on the planet, right?
Right. And probably why I'm so busy.
Because I was, because I'm the only addict out there, there's only one addict in the whole entire world, and that was me, right? So,
yeah. So, it is actually a fun, I don't know if you've ever been to it. Have you ever been to a game here?
I haven't yet, no.
Okay. No. Well, I highly recommend it.
No, since I got sober, I think I've been to Vegas maybe once. So.
Yeah.
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 I could probably handle it now that I'm, you know, 15 years sober, but, you know, early on in sobriety, that's not a good place to go.
No, it probably, yeah. I mean, it really is amazing when people do get sober here. I mean, the fact that they have so many options and stuff, it's a,
yeah.
I give them a lot of credit. So it's a,
yeah.
But
the addicts who like to be challenged go to Vegas. Right.
That's what a lot of them say. If you can get sober here, you can get sober anywhere, because it's
definitely, exactly, yeah.
You don't have to travel very far to find whatever it is that your drug of choice
you're looking for. Yeah.
So, all right. Well, okay. So on to stuff. So I know that. Just as I've listened to you talk on different podcasts and obviously even reading the book and stuff, you're very a big proponent on kind of sharing your story and talking through and the importance of that as far as how that just releases everything. So for my guests and just, you know, to kind of get a brief history about you, do you mind just kind of starting us out with that? Just
yeah.
About your story?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah. Well, you know, I had two significant traumas, I guess, in my childhood and adolescence. So I grew up in a home where both my parents experienced childhood trauma in their life. And that manifested itself into addictive behavior. So my dad was an alcoholic. My mom was a prescription pill addict. And so I grew up in a home that was, you know, chaotic, insane, violent, you know, you name it. And then as a phenom hockey player, as a kid, I ran into this guy who basically promised me a one-way ticket to the NHL. And over a 2.5 year period, he raped me 150 times. And so, you know, those were probably the two most significant events that I can recall. And so, early on, I would say 15 years old, I discovered alcohol for the first time and, you know, basically became an instant alcoholic. And then, you know, became a very high functioning, you know, crazy person, you know, and, but, you know, what I find interesting about addiction is, like, I hate the word addiction because it has so much shame attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
And really what it is it's emotional pain management. That's what I call it.
Yeah, know? I love that.
And from, you know, those two significant events in my life, you know, I was left in a lot of emotional pain and suffering. And, you know, alcohol, drugs, food, sex, gambling, relationships, you name it, you know, became a great coping mechanism to be able to suppress, you know, that emotional pain that I was experiencing almost on a daily basis. And then, you know, towards the end of my career, you know, I'd suffered from mental illness, I would say, you know, from a child, but didn't really know what it was, yeah, you know, yeah. Just kind of powered through it.
Right.
But at the end of my career, you know, I could no longer, you know, manage, you know, my mental illness. And, you know, you had probably 12 concussions on top of, you know, everything else that was going on. You know, and essentially, you know, there's a story out there that, you know, basically says that addictions took me out of the game. And really it was my, that I could no longer manage my depression, my anxiety, my panic attacks, et cetera, et cetera. And so, you know, September 18th of 2005, I decided that, you know, I was going to do this differently and, got sober and, you know, started down this road and path of healing. And really it wasn't until 2009 when I wrote my book, Playing with Fire, you know, the famous saying, you're only as sick as your secrets. And basically that book revealed everything to the world. And what happened was, is I started to run into a whole bunch of people who had the same experiences I did. And I was like, wow. So by me finding my voice and putting a voice to my pain and suffering, I can also help other people do the same thing. And, you know, voila, here we are, you know, 15 years later. And, you know, I couldn't have imagined that, you know, this would be, you know, my sort of post-professional hockey career life. But, you know, the universe has a funny way of, you know, putting things together for you when you're ready to, you know, do the work. And yeah, and so that's basically it in a nutshell, is that, you know, I've become this sort of beacon of safety for people to, you know, seek me out and, you know, talk about what they need to talk about.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. Like you said, just the whole fact of like, just how the universe kind of makes those things happen. But, you know, not that we like it, but, you know, those experiences sort of that kind of prepare us for that, even though at the time we're not really liking that preparation. We're kind of like, it sucks actually, you know, the traumas we're experiencing, but you know, they kind of build on each other. Now, obviously you're in a place too, where you can like utilize that. And that's the whole thing about the trauma. There was a quote that I was looking up and I came across, and it says, you know, being traumatized, you know, when you're in a traumatized state, you continue to organize your life as if the trauma were still going on. How do you think that was for you? Like, what was that like when you were still in it? What were you like, how was your life organized in a way that it was still happening? If that,
well, I always say that, you know, I grew up in chaos.
Okay. Yeah.
So chaos and drama. So if there wasn't any chaos and drama in my life, guess what? I created it. Because it's the only place I felt safe.
Yeah.
And so perfect example is, if any of your listeners ever watched me play hockey, you know, the game would be sort of, you know, boring. And then I would jump over the boards and all hell would break loose. And it was because, you know, chaos was kind of my friend and drama was my friend. And so, you know, we go out and create a whole bunch of wreckage, because that's the only place we sort of feel safe.
Yeah. Right?
And,
or comfortable. I like that word too.
Yeah. Comfortable. Yeah.
Like, like in that comfort place of like, that's what that, you know, like peace and serenity and all that stuff at that time, that feels uncomfortable. It's not normal, or it doesn't, it's like, this is weird. Like I don't know, you know,
I know. Yeah. And so yeah, it's, you know, trauma
in the chaos was a part of like how you organized your life as a way. So if things were, you know, in a kind of like a calm state, it's like, I got to do something to change that up, whether it's go hit somebody on the ice, or whether it's go, you know, chug a bunch of beers or whatever, or get in a fight or do something. I got to do something to kind of make something be different here.
You know, we are so uncomfortable in our own skin, you know, and when you're in your own skin, that means peace, joy, happiness, love, you know, all that stuff. Well, we've never experienced any of that, you know, in our life, you know? And so, you know, it's really hard to grasp onto that concept that, you know, I can experience peace, joy, happiness, love, and, you know, really cool relationships and all that. But really at the end of the day, what it all comes down to is I was absolutely running away from myself because I couldn't be in a relationship with myself.
Yeah.
And ultimately I believe that's what recovery is all about, you know, is how do I get comfortable in my own skin? And the more comfortable I get in my own skin, guess what? I attract people that can help me along the way. Mm-hmm. But when I'm in chaos, who am I going to attract? Fucked up people, right? You know, right? Because you know, that's just how it works, yeah, right? Yeah. You know, the law of attraction is, you know,
it's going to be there.
Because we wear it here, mm-hmm. you know, like we meet unconsciously before we actually meet in the present.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And that was kind of interesting when, you know, somebody explained that to me and I was like, wow, that explains every relationship that I've ever been in. Right. You know,
so our force fields were like sending wavelengths and, or, you know, and bringing us together. Yeah, for sure. No, it definitely, that state of being that you're in, it definitely is a big part of what you're going to attract to yourself. Kind of even like building off that too, about the whole, the trauma thing. There was a quote in your book where it says, you know, you actually said this, you build your life around something you can't be honest about, and then it just eats at you, you know? Yeah. And like you said, that's the, you know, the whole thing about that too. Like, and I couldn't, you know, as I was kind of rereading the book and stuff and just looking for some things to kind of talk about too. I mean, it was just, you know, just living with that and especially the time frame, you know, like you said, and being in the sports world, and we know how difficult the sports world mm-hmm. is, as far as even today. I mean, just coming out with stuff and being able to talk about what's really going on. I mean, just even as recent as, like, you know, the whole Roy Holiday thing and kind of went through and stuff like that. And just, you know, not being able to talk about your depression or your addictions or things just as in fear of what the outcome is going to be, that there's not going to be that support because all we're concerned about is your performance. So you're just, you know, you're in that bubble of like, even if I want to, I can't, or I don't feel like I can.
Yeah.
And so I just, you know, just the fact. Well,
I remember, you know, in New York when, you know, my mental illness was sort of screaming at me. And, mm-hmm. you know, I remember that first conversation with the doctor and going, you know, like, I just don't feel right. You know, like there's something going on. Like, I just don't feel like myself. Right. And he was like, you know, baffled.
Right.
You know, and he's a doctor, you know, somebody you're supposed to, you know, trust. He went to
school for this. What the hell?
Yeah, exactly. And so then what does he do? He looks at my symptoms and then gives me some synthetic brain chemistry to try, you know, big pharma.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And, you know, then I was on that fucking roller coaster for the next, I think it was probably 2.5 years. And I can tell you what a ride that was.
Yeah. Well, just as a disclaimer, because I've heard you talk about this a few times on podcasts, I am not a proponent of big pharma. I like people to work on their stuff before. I mean, obviously, if there's a time and place and
people, yeah,
I'm not opposed to it, but I definitely want people to see if we can fix what's going on inside of here before. Yeah. Just jump to that. So just want to make sure.
No, I get it.
But you know, it is an easy thing to just like, I mean, like I said, I mean, doctors, whatever, with prescription pills, whatever it might be. I mean, it's just, that's like, that can be our go-to. Right. And I think, you know, the other challenges, and this is what I see a lot of times with people, even in recovery and doing things, it's like they carry that addiction mindset into their recovery, which is, I want this to be like, I should just be able to do this really quick and let's get this over. And you know, and it's like, well, wait a second, this is, you know, you spent whatever many years putting this together, like this is mm-hmm. not just going to unravel at one time, right?
When I stand on stage, I say to people, I'm in therapy for the rest of my life. And you should see the looks I get. People are like, what do you mean there's no quick fix? I go, when it comes to trauma,
mm-hmm.
there is no quick fix.
Yeah.
It's a certain acceptance that this is, and, you know, from a science perspective is, you know, my chemistry's fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's basically what it is. My chemistry's messed up.
Right.
Because I've had all these traumatic experiences. But what I also know is that the brain is, you know, neuroplastic, and you can actually rewire all that trauma. But it takes a lot of hard work to do that. And so, you know, the goal is I want to be better today than I was yesterday. That's it. Right.
Yeah.
And the more I can train my brain to live in the moment and in the present, the way better off I'm going to be. Right. Because if I think about the past, that's depression. And if I think about anxiety, that's the future.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if I can just focus in on, you know, do I have everything I need right here, right now in this moment? Absolutely. 100%. You know, that's the case.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
You know,
it's some good stuff. I think, you know, when we look at again, just that, just kind of what you're talking about, and that the key word that I took out of that too is acceptance, and that's where people, I mean, obviously, can get hung up on and struggle with just the idea of acceptance of what this means for me, or the idea that it's going to be, you know, I have to accept that this is a process. This is, could, you know, a lifelong process, and people definitely, or even just the acceptance of what comes with that. Like I ask people three questions: what do you want? What are you willing to do? And then how far are you willing to go? Because the dynamic is like, you know, when you start to get into that, how far are you willing to go? It's like, well, if you have, like, you know, people with whatever addiction, you know, it's like, well, if you, you know, are you willing to, you know, go so far as to give up certain friends, or are you willing to go so far as to, you know, not hang out at a bar, what, you know, whatever, you know, whatever it might be, then you start asking those things like, well, I don't know if I need to do that. And it's like, well, then, you know, you haven't really accepted the process.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you a great story. So, you know, I was, because I'm wired to win and defeat and, you know, all that, you know, I thought my mental illness was the same, that eventually, like, it would completely go away forever and never come back. Okay. That was my mindset. Yeah. And that was sort of my, you know, my goal.
Yeah.
Right. So COVID hits this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't get out of bed. I was in bed for a month and a half, could barely get to the washroom, having like panic attacks, you know, three or four, like massive panic attacks every day. And then at the end of it, I was like, you know what? You've never really accepted the fact that you have mental illness. And I, honest to God, I finally accepted it. And I haven't had any more depression or any more anxiety, because it was just like, wow, okay, the universe wanted me to accept the fact that, you know, this is what the rest of my life looks like. But I also know from 12 step that it's one day at a time. Right. And so, you know, for me, that whole one day at a time thing, like, is the key to my, you know, to my life is, you know, I find a routine 24 hours a day, get up the next day, rinse and repeat. Right. But I'm also, at the same time working on, you know, that one thing that, you know, continues to rewire, you know, my brain. And a lot of people that I work with, you know, have a really hard time with acceptance.
Yeah,
if I'm gonna accept that I'm an alcoholic, then I better accept that I have mental illness too, because it's, I believe it's the same concept, right?
Yeah. And I think a lot of times, I mean, there's always like an underlying cause, right? I mean, it's like,
you know,
it's like the, there's a constant dual diagnosis there with whatever addiction you have, again, whether it's, you know, the trauma starts it, and then it's, you know, onto some type of mental, you know, mental illness, whether it's depression or anxiety, for sure. And I think even just like you said, with that one day at a time dynamic, when, even when it comes to acceptance, it's like, you know, your ego doesn't go away. Like you said, you like to win, you know what I mean? It's like, so my ego doesn't go away. So if I'm not in constant kind of re, you know, kind of rechecking myself and kind of like reestablish, my ego's going to come in and be like, hey, wait, you got this. You're like, you're good. You know, like you've done, like you're in a better place and whatever. And then bam, you know, it's like,
In recovery, you cannot have that attitude.
Right.
You know, there's a surrender aspect, and then there's that humility part, right? Mm-hmm. And vulnerability, right?
You know,
the key to me sort of becoming this, you know, guy that everybody seeks out is I've become real vulnerable.
Yeah.
And vulnerability creates safety. And then when you have safety, that's when the magic of healing happens, is when people feel safe. You know, I spent my whole life not feeling safe, you know, and, you know, today I do, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I heard you talk about that on a podcast before, just how like one of the obstacles that we have in our society today is just like creating that safe space, even though, and I like the way you put it, even though we have all this awareness, you know, but we still can't wrap our minds around the fact that people don't feel safe, or there's not that safe enough environment to where we really can come out and share, you know, these things in a way that, you know, we need to. Right. So,
yeah. Exactly. And you know, I've seen some, you know, incredible examples of, you know, vulnerability. Like, we did a conference in Calgary.
Mm-hmm.
We had like 100 people for the day, and it was just a day of, you know, healing and sharing and all this stuff. And so we created such a safe space, and a lot of the audience were sexual abuse survivors. So this guy gets out of his chair and he says, you know, I've never felt this safe in my whole entire life. And I've been carrying around this secret for a long time. And he said, I used to molest my sister. And what happened was, girls in the room who had been molested by their brothers got out of their chairs, went over and embraced this man.
Oh, wow.
And to me, that's healing. Like, mm-hmm. that's what healing ultimately looks like, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, for those women that got up and went over there, like, you should have seen their demeanor like almost immediately change, because they were like, because they saw the other girls get up and they were like, oh my God, I thought I was the only one that was molested by my brother. And look, there's more than, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was just, it was unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the kind of shit that gets me out of bed every day. Like, that kind of stuff gets me out of bed, because, you know, like, I've done a lot of drugs in my day, and that to me is, you know, the ultimate in dopamine and serotonin and, you know, all those wonderful oxytocin, all those amazing chemicals that we produce in our body. And, you know, that kind of realism doesn't get better than that.
Yeah. I think that's one thing. And kind of when you say that too, it just makes you think about, you know, obviously what I do for work too. And sometimes it's nice, but it's also too, like, it's always in a room where not everybody can see, but like, it's such a powerful experience when you see somebody kind of have that awakening, or they're able to share something or have that insight or that aha moment to where it just like comes together for them. And it's just, it's awesome. But again, it takes that safe space to be able to, you know, and I know there's a lot of, you know, talk, Brene Brown talks a lot about vulnerability and the importance of it, and those are, and I think we're moving in good, better directions with that, but it just sometimes feels like a snail's pace, you know.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I can't wait for the day when it becomes, you know, just mainstream, because, you know, if you look at what's happening in the world right now,
mm-hmm.
is, you know, you have a whole bunch of people who've carried around suppressed anger and rage for a long time, and now they've been given the space to be able to release that, but it's not healthy.
Yeah.
You know, the release that's happening is not healthy.
Yeah. You
know? And so, you know, the hurt people hurt people, right? And so that's basically, I think, what's happening right now is that, you know, and, you know, the empathetic side of me is like, oh my God, man, if I could just, you know,
help you understand or see.
That
there's, this is just like it's almost like the anger iceberg. This is just the tip of it. Underneath all that, there's a lot of pain. There's a lot of,
Well, I know from my own experience, it's sadness, right? That's what's underneath anger.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and anger is a great way to, you know, it's great for protection because it tells people stay the fuck away from me. Right.
Yeah. You know? Well, in fact, can I read a quote from your book?
Yeah.
So this was from a therapist later on and like kind of, in one of your, when you went to, in the substance abuse treatment program with the NHL, she said, you've used anger your entire life. It's helped you tell, it's helped you tell people to leave you alone and be intimidating, but that's not who you are.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It was this protective shield that, you know, because my experience was if I go into a relationship, I'm going to get hurt. Right. And I'm kind of tired of getting hurt. You know, I just want to be loved and accepted and, you know, all that stuff. And so, you know, that shield, you know, but who was I hurting the most? I was hurting myself at the end of the day, right. By having this, you know, facade, so to speak, you know?
Right.
Right. So,
yeah, I mean, hurting yourself, you're not really getting the healing. You're just, like you said, I mean, you can't even, you know, you're not allowing people to care for you or love you or anything. It's just like, I'm just going to be in this protection mode and not let you close.
Or if they were, you know, because I can't trust, I don't know if it's real or not. Right. You know, that back and forth. Right. Cause there was lots of people in my life that, you know, truly, truly cared deeply about me, but I wouldn't let them, you know, do that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I would always self-sabotage those relationships because I, you know, and that's one thing that I've learned about trauma is really what trauma teaches us. And so I've come up with sort of four things of what trauma teaches us. And the first one is abandonment and neglect. Right? Second one, I'm not good enough. Third one, I'm not lovable. And then the fourth one, do I even exist?
Yeah.
Right. You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, when I discovered that, I was like, man, there's a rewiring process, you know, sort of personified. And you know, that's when it was like, okay, so you've neglected yourself for so long and allowed yourself to sort of hardwire these four beliefs. Well, how do I get out of it? Well, I got to have a relationship with myself, right? So I get rid of those, you know, beliefs.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, even in relation to that, like when you talk about the abandonment step too, it's like, not only have you felt abandonment, like, I mean, even just relating to that to your own story, I mean, just early on, like, you know, with your parents' addictions and kind of what they were going through, obviously there was abandonment there, you know, but then, like I said, you kind of abandoned yourself. I think one of the things I heard you on a different podcast kind of say this quote, once the abuser leaves, then you kind of take on that role of the abuser. So not only, I mean, again, you're abandoning yourself by doing something, you know, more negative. And when I heard that, it was just interesting because I thought, wow, like I'm working with this client right now and we kind of just have been coming to this aha moment with his trauma. And what was interesting about for him is that he wasn't sexually abused himself, but he was friends with the abuser that abused his sister and some other people. Yeah. And so then he took on the responsibility. So when they found out that this person had done some abusing, it was just like, that's what he did. He took on the role of the abuser, but not in the same way, not in the right. sexual abuse, way, yeah. but like he abused himself. You know what I mean? Yeah. He abused himself for all these years. He's never, like, he's just kept doing that. He's just kept abusing himself. And those things, like you said, I'm not lovable. I'm not worthy. All of that was like, just like, that's how he's lived his life, because he felt responsible for what had happened. And it's so painful to see that, like, somebody that they've lived their life in that way. But that's, I mean, again, that one, that's trauma, but that's also a part of that sense of our society where we don't feel safe to even talk about that, you know? So those are
exactly.
But anyway, that I just, like I said, I really like that quote about the idea that when the abuser leaves, we take on that role, you know? And that was very,
because we don't think we deserve, you know?
Right. Those limiting, or those core beliefs or whatever, those beliefs are already setting in. And it's like we already feel those things, the happening, that we're not lovable. We're not good enough. We don't have that in us. And so,
Well, and here's the thing is that I tried to do this by myself, right? I tried to figure this out because I'm a pretty intelligent guy, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I thought that I could outthink all of it, okay, and do it on my own. And what I realized is, you know, I was abused, abandoned, neglected in relationship. Okay. So how am I going to heal all of that? Well, it's going to have to be in relationship. Right.
Yeah.
First one is myself. And then secondly is with, you know, other people.
Other people. Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, that's why I love 12 step, because you're in relationship with people. Right, who completely understand, you know, the disease and relationships and all this stuff, right? So, you know, that's why I call myself an expert in relational trauma, is because, you know, the only way you're going to heal is in relationship. You know, you're abused in relationship, you're going to heal in relationship, right? So, you know, and you know, that the relationship we neglect the most is the one we have with ourselves, because nobody's ever taught us that.
Yeah.
Right. You know, nobody's ever taught us that. And if, you know, we were taught that, then, you know, we would probably have a lot less pain and suffering in our lives. But, you know, I grew up in the suck it up era.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know?
Yeah.
You'd be crying and your parents would be like, stop crying, you know, I'll give you something to cry about. But, you know, that we were never taught to be able to say, you know, no, like I'm really sad right now, you know, and, you know, I need to release this sadness, because if I suck it up, guess what? I'm going to be one fucking crazy kid in school who can't fucking sit still in his desk. And now I'm
troubled kid, or now
I have ADHD, you know, 500 labels, and you know what I mean, like, so right. So
then here comes pharma again, right?
It's yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
here's some Ritalin. Ooh,
it definitely can be quite, and like you said, that whole suck it up era. I mean, I grew up on a farm with four brothers, so it was like, you know, just toughness and all that stuff. And it's hard to be vulnerable. And we did a podcast a little while ago with two of my brothers. And we talked about, like, we grew up, my dad had a pain pill, you know, addiction or whatever. And again, it's in a time where, you know, like, addiction really wasn't talked about that much, or I even knew exactly what that was, you know. But you're experiencing everything that goes along with it, the lies, the whatever, all the different things. You know, I remember I was in ninth grade and my dad was asking me for money, and it's just like, what the, you know, it's like just backwards stuff. Right. You know? But yeah, that was, so, you know, when you talk about just being able to share that story, that was probably one of the most popular episodes that we had, just because, you know, people were like, one, they were just, you know, like in awestruck. They didn't even know like all that stuff was going on, you know, even though we went to school together, we, whatever, you know, that was happening.
Yeah, we can wear lipstick like nobody's business, right? You know, I call it lipstick. We can leave the house and, you know, leave all that craziness behind and, you know, sort of go out in the real world and, you know, fake it.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Very. So we're short on time a little bit, but like any other obstacles you see as far as healing with trauma? I mean, like you mentioned like your big thing is connection and conversation kind of leads to personal transformation. So, you know, healing and relationships, but as far as like other obstacles, like we talked about like safety, any other things that you see that people struggle with as far as just getting the help that they need, or what challenges kind of come up with that?
Yeah. Well, trying to sort of relay this to a story or real life experience, but I'm a big believer in healing the spirit, the body, and the mind. Mm-hmm. Okay? Those three things are really, really important.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when I start working with people, or they reach out and they, you know, they want some coaching, one of the first questions I always ask is, where are you at in your spirituality? Because I believe it's always the last thing that people look at.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I was living in Santa Fe, I used to go to this all men's meeting. And and there was this guy there. And his name was Jack, and he was an old biker. He had beautiful, long, white hair, and, you know, he was tanned and toned and very handsome guy. And I remember I was outside having a cigarette after the meeting, and he came up to me, and he was like, "Kid, how you doing?" I said, "Wow, I'm not doing very good." So I'm just kind of hanging on, and he said, "How are you doing with your higher power stuff?" And I was like, you know, it's not happening, right?
Who's that?
Yeah. And then he said something I'll never forget. He says, you know, "Do you realize in this program that you get to pick your own God?" And I was like, "What the fuck are you talking about?" You know, because my experience with religion is like really fucked up, right? You know, I went to the Catholic Church on Sundays, and Thursdays I went to, you know, this Jehovah Witness cult, you know. So, you know, my concept of spirituality was, you know,
a little messed up, yeah.
Needless to say, you know. So the night before I got sober, I ended up in a washroom on my hands and knees, and I was crying and upset, and, you know, like I was done. Like completely done. So I remember having this conversation with this Jack guy. And so I said to myself, okay, I'm going to give this, you know, God of my own understanding a try. And so I went up one side of God, I went down the other side of God and called him every name in the book, made up a couple of my own. And, you know, then I said, you know, I realize you only give me as much as I can handle. I said, I'm full. Like, you can't put one more thing on my plate. And then at the end of the conversation, I said, please, God, take away the obsession to drink and do drugs. And then I went to bed. Next day, I woke up, and on my way to the washroom, I had to walk by this big mirror in my bathroom. And sort of as I was kind of rubbing the sleep out of my eyes, I glanced out of the corner of my eye, and I stopped dead in my tracks, and I started staring at myself in the mirror. And I can't remember the last time I stared at myself in the mirror, because I was so full of shame and guilt that I couldn't do it. So I think I stared in the mirror for like 40 minutes. And then at the end of the 40 minutes, I was like, holy shit. So my prayer has been answered. And that was, you know, September 18th of 2005 and haven't had a drink or a drug since. And so the reason why I tell that story was the night before, I actually surrendered.
Yeah.
And I gave up, you know, and I turned my will and my life over to the care of the universe as I understand it. And since that happened, you know, the universe has given me all of these incredible, amazing things. And so, you know, I avoid the word God because so many people get triggered by that word. So, you know, I say the universe.
Yeah.
Because, you know, everything that I've experienced in my life has led to this, you know, led to this moment. And, you know, there are gifts in pain and suffering. That's why we have them. Yeah. Is because the only way we learn is from pain and suffering, right? And so, you know, I look at my parents as a gift. I look at my abuser as a gift in my life, because without those experiences, I'm not talking to you on this podcast about healing. And, you know, so, you know, we have to embrace, you know, those most difficult times in our life instead of completely avoiding them, you know. And, you know, I work in the prison system too, as well. And the two greatest lessons that I've been taught by these guys, because I always want to learn more from the people that I'm coaching than I can teach them. And, you know, what they taught me first was compassion, that everybody has a story. You know, these guys aren't bad guys. They've had some horrible shit that's happened to them as children, right? You know, I maybe have, what, 15 layers of trauma. These guys got 70 layers, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I learned compassion. I learned to listen. I learned to not judge people. And then secondly, they taught me forgiveness, the importance of forgiveness, you know? And I can't tell you how important, you know, that last word is. And, you know, when I do seminars or I'm doing speaking engagements and I talk about the word forgiveness, it is a very triggering word for a lot of people, you know. But, you know, then I say, okay, if you don't like the word forgiveness, then call it self-compassion then.
Yeah.
Be compassionate towards yourself, right? So, you know, it's been an amazing journey, and I'm so blessed, and you know that everything that I need is right in front of me. I just gotta go ask for it,
right?
You know, be vulnerable, and you know.
Yeah, I thought one of the, just to kind of like wrap up in too, just I thought one of the most powerful moments, like even in the book, was, you know, in the hotel room, and you know, your parents knocked on the door and came in, and they probably weren't expecting what they got.
Yeah.
But, but at the same time, it was such a powerful moment for you. And like you said, it's just like the need for that apology, and, and probably even at some level, like I said, they didn't really even understand, because just what they were in, what they were even doing, because they had their own issues and stuff. But, but for them to be able to, for you to be able to have that moment with them and kind of start that process of healing, you know, I thought that was,
I got sober right after that.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, kind, it's amazing when you sort of unpack your story, you see certain, you know, moments that led you to, you know, where you're at today. So,
yeah. Well, I think it's, you know, I mean, for me personally, I mean, I just see you as the real deal. I mean, there's not a lot of people out there that, you know, kind of are able to do what you do and offer just like the help, you know. I mean, I think one thing, you know, when I, you know, scheduled to come on or whatever, first of all, I was surprised you got back to me. I've reached out to several people. They don't always get back. So the fact that, you know, this is really a part of your, you know, your mission and your purpose, and you really take that to heart and you're willing to take the time to put that message out there, I think says a lot. And I really appreciate it. I think that to me speaks a lot about just, like, again, your genuineness, your realness. And I've, like I said, I've been on a Theo Fleury branch just with different things. And I mean, you've got some great insight to offer. So if anybody, you know, is looking for more, I'm going to put this stuff in the notes, but
yeah, cool. We're just in the process of rolling out, because I can't speak, because I can't get on a plane.
Right.
But we've moved, a lot of our stuff online. So I've come up with a program.
Okay.
It's like a 6-month program, and, you know, you'll get to work with me one-on-one through Zoom on, you know, a weekly basis. And I've sort of come up with a plan to help you alleviate some of your traumatic issues or addiction issues or mental health issues and stuff. So, you know, I'm excited about that.
Yeah, it's awesome. So anybody that's listening, and like I said, I'll put in the notes, the website and stuff. But I mean, I think, you know, if you've had trauma in your life and you're looking for some guidance, I think definitely get a lot of value for that. I do want to say one last thing. My wife says, you know, if you have any connections to Doug Gilmore, like, she would, that's who she loved, you know. So.
Oh, yeah, of course. every girl loved Dougie Gilmore. Yeah. I used to ride his coattails all the time in the bars. So
yeah, it's probably pretty devastating when he got traded. Well, it was devastating on a lot of levels why he got traded, but you know, but yes.
Worst trade in Calgary Flames history.
Yeah, I was like looking at it in the book, and I was like, what the hell was going on there?
I know.
But
it set the franchise back a lot of years, man, that trade. So
yeah. Unfortunately. Yeah. Well, it's been great to have you, Theo. I really appreciate you coming on. I think, you know, whoever listens to this will be benefited, you know, just from as far as like understanding trauma and being able to kind of take that on. So again, thanks for coming in and taking the time.
Anytime, man. Let's do it again sometime.
Yeah, I was just saying, I'm just going to. All right. Well, I just want to thank again my guest, Theo Fleury, for coming in and to sharing everything about trauma and the things that he has experienced. Just so much insight and so much understanding about what it takes to heal trauma. And he really is very humble and just, like I said, just full of insight. Hopefully you got out of it as much as I did. I know as I was even just talking to him, I was just like, man, this guy has a lot to offer. And I could sit there and talk to him all day. And he's just so friendly. Our conversations before and after the recording, just very, very friendly, very upbeat guy. Wonderful to talk to, very endearing. And so if you get a chance, you know, visit his website, theofleury.life, and you can get more of Theo. You know, if you need some one-on-one stuff or some coaching and want to work through your trauma with him, he's offering that. And so, lots of opportunity for him. And just like I said, he's very intentional about his desire to, help people and help them get on a path, and just very giving of his time to do that. So a couple things I just want to say about trauma. For all of us, I think the one thing that we need to recognize is that we all have trauma. I heard this said in different podcasts, is that if you had parents, you had trauma. And so, you know, and not that it's all about our parents, but we just, you know, we've all experienced trauma. And I think one of the things is that maybe it's hard for us to accept that. Maybe we don't want to see ourselves as a victim. But accepting that we've had trauma doesn't necessarily make us a victim. It's just life. It's just a part of life. And I think kind of what Theo had even said too, is just like those experiences are building you towards something better. And I think the other part about if we don't acknowledge our trauma, we don't then maybe acknowledge where we might be stuck or where things might be off in our life. You know, I know there's a quote in a book I've been reading called "The Personality Is Not Permanent" by Ben Hardy. And he says, when most people think about trauma, they imagine it only in its extreme manifestations, such as PTSD. Trauma is not limited to a major, easily recognized event. Trauma, in a variety of forms, is a part of each of our lives. It includes any negative experience or incident that shapes who we are and how you operate in the world. We have all experienced and have been or are impacted by trauma. So that's, I just think that that speaks the truth. We've all been impacted by trauma. We've all experienced trauma. And again, it may not be at the level of PTSD, but it has impacted us and we have experienced it. And so now it's up to us. Well, what do we do with that? What does that mean? How has it impacted us? What obstacles has it created? You know, a lot of times, you know, as we even talked about in the podcast, is that we build our lives around our trauma to avoid the pain of the past. And so, you know, there may be things that we're doing, things that we're not doing, you know, trauma and what it in, is, what its impact is sometimes creates a fear in us. And so we go to a maybe even lesser goal rather than trying to achieve something better because we don't want to experience pain. So it might just be blocking us from being our best self. So if we can, and if we want to have our best life and be able to really do the things that we can do and we can achieve, we need to accept and face our trauma and the impact that it's had on us. And like I said, for some, it may not be that much. It may just be a quick fix type thing, even though we talked about there's no quick fix. But it might not be like this lifelong journey. It's just, you know, what's my trauma been? How's it impact me? How do I need to move forward on that? Maybe it's just simply talking about it for the first time. You know, I know Theo carried his trauma around with him for a long time. And like he said, it really ate him up, but he just didn't feel like there was a safe place to share that with. So if you're in that boat, if you have not been able to find a safe place to share your trauma, I hope you can do that. Maybe it's me. Maybe it's somebody else that you would consider safe. Again, like I mentioned at the beginning, you know, if you're thinking about this episode and maybe some trauma that you've experienced that you might need to take care of, go to my website. My contact information is, again, thevegastherapist@gmail.com. If you want to reach out and talk to me, I'd be happy to help you with that. So, all right. Well, that's been the episode. So much to think about, so much to process, and just a lot of good stuff. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. And this is The Vegas Therapist signing off. I'll see you next time.